Okay, so after all the prakim of the build-up and then the construction of the Beis HaMikdash and the long tefillah that Shlomo HaMelech had upon the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, so now we're ready to move in at last to the final three prakim and look at the rest of Shlomo's career. So this should hopefully move more quickly. We'll definitely, I think, finish Parak Tes today, and then we've got Yud and Yud Aleph left to go. So load up the screen share. The parak is going to be divided up into a couple of parts. First, we're going to have like a final piece relating back to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and then we'll move on to what Shlomo is doing geopolitically and the rest of the neighborhood. So here we go. Scroll up. I called this the shiur for today all of Shlomo's desire, because the term Cheshek Shlomo's desire is going to come up twice in our limud today. On the one hand, it's great because Shlomo is able to accomplish everything he wants. Things are looking fantastic. But on the other hand, Shlomo desires a lot, and that's going to cause trouble going forward. So today it's still a happy parent today. So let's see. Before we start, I want to refresh our memory of something we learned already a few months ago back in Parag Gimel, when Shlomo got the first nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the famous dream where he's or Hashem tests him and says, Sha'al ma'eten lach, right? You can have whatever you want. What do you want me to give you? And Shlomo realizes that he is not supposed to ask for wealth or power or fame, but instead he's supposed to ask for a wise heart so that he can actually do the job of ruling B'nai Yisrael successfully. So Shlomo passes the test back then. And then in the aftermath, so Hashem tells him, you're going to get, not only that, I'll give you everything, right? You're going to be tremendously rewarded. However, you need to know that all of this is contingent upon keeping the mitzvot and following the Torah. If you follow the path of David, your father, then it's all going to work out great. And if not, then not. That was what we had at the beginning of the reign of Shlomo. So now, as the Mefarshim point out, we have a strikingly parallel nevuah at the beginning of Parak Tes. Let's make this a little bit bigger. Here we go. The Navi tells us that upon the completion of Shlomo's building, the Beis HaMikdash and the royal house, Veis kol cheshek Shlomo asher chafetz lasos. Shlomo has done all the delight, everything that Shlomo wanted to do, right? Shlomo has accomplished all of it. So turn out says now that Shlomo has everything. So the Navi itself explicitly references the previous Nevuah. Hashem comes back to Shlomo a second time. And let's see.
And I have a quick question.
Sure, yeah.
Are those words used anywhere else in Tanakh? The Ve'es kol cheshek Shlomo asher chafetz lasos? In kind of.
I don't know. Let's see.
Or even the word cheshek, is that ever used?
Maybe this one other time, and there's a screen share sharing that I have here from the Concordatia.
No,
Oh,
or
so
I
hold on a
don't think
second.
it is,
Okay,
maybe.
let me do this again. One second. Let me stop share. Let me share again. So here's the Concordatia, and three out of the four are exclusive to Shlomo. The two in our parak over here, the parallel passage in Divrei Hayamim, and then he has this pasuk in Yeshaya. Okay, so not totally unique, but pretty close.
Okay.
Pretty close. So
Thank you.
yeah, cool. Okay, so Shlomo, I mean, right? He wants a lot. He's delighting. Everything is great, right? Like it's amazing. Shlomo has everything he wants. He can. On the other hand, you can maybe hear Kehelas in the background, right? Because Kehelas, Shlomo has everything he wants, but not always so simple. But so he has everything. So Hashem comes to him once again. V'yomer Hashem Elav Shamati Es Tfilascha V'Es Tchinascha Asher Sanata Lefanai. I've heard your tefillah. Now let's remember the tefillah that that Shlomo had was that Hashem should reside His presence in the Mikdash. It should be a place with elevated divine providence and a place where our tefillahs are answered. Right. So, being as Shlomo davened that the Beis Hamikdash should be a place where tefillahs are answered. So now Hashem says, I heard your tefillah, and I'm going to come through. I have sanctified the house so that my name will be placed over it forever. My eyes and my heart will be there for all days. The Malbim in a minute is going to zero in on the fact that Ad Olam and Kol Hayamim may be different things. It's going to be a classic Malbim move, right? We have two phrases that seem synonymous. The Malbim is going to suggest that if we look at it more carefully, it's actually anything but. Okay, so Shlomo davened, he wanted Hashem to rest in the Mikdash, and he wanted Hashem to have providence over the Mikdash, and sure enough, that tefillah is answered as well. However, it's all contingent once again, right? If you walk in front of me, so then I will preserve your throne. Okay, so just like I promised David, and now let's pause here for a second, right? We're going to have to get to the rest of the Nevuah, where Hashem is going to say what's going to happen if you don't listen. But just to see a couple of things in the Mefarshim. So number one, the Radak. My eyes and my heart will be there all the days. So the Radak points out this is exactly what Shlomo had been davening for. Hashgachasi, my providence is going to be there all the time, right? David, all Shlomo wanted was a place where we can have a Beis HaMikdash, where we can daven, and Hashem will hear our tefillos. And that's exactly what Hashem is telling him. You're going to get exactly what you wanted. Okay. Now, the Malbim, though, takes things another level, because he points out that Shlomo had actually asked for two things. In most of Shlomo's tefillah, he had asked for Hashem to have Hashgacha over the Beis HaMikdash. The truth is, though, in the beginning of the tefillah, Shlomo had asked for success, personal success for his own kingship. So the Malbim points out that both of those have been granted. Hashem says, if you keep the mitzvos, the Mikdash will succeed. If you keep the mitzvos, then your royal line will succeed. I think we saw a couple of weeks ago the idea that the two of those are linked because of the very proximity of the building of the palace of Shlomo to the proximity of the Beis HaMikdash. But now the Malbim says something very interesting. It says, Hashem promised Shlomo here two things. One is that lasum es shemi. Right, I'm going to place my name on the mikdash. That was one phrase that Hashem had. The other one was she'inai v'libi yihyu sham. My eyes and my heart will be there. Now, what is the difference between Hashem putting His name on it and the eyes and heart being there? The Malbim says that this ties back to the difference between is being ad olam, being forever, versus being kol hayamim. Malbim explains there's a big difference. Because as we know the end of Sefer Melachim, the Mikdash is going to be destroyed. So he says, Kol Hayamim, all the days, doesn't mean eternity. He says, Kol Hayamim means the days which are reserved for a certain purpose, right? All the days, like for example, Kol Hayamim Asher Atem Chayim Ala Adama, all the days. In other words, as long as the Mikdash is standing, Hashem promises that there will be Hashgacha there. Right, there will be special hashgacha on this mikdash as long as the mikdash is standing. As long as there's a mikdash, you can come and daven, and Hashem will hear your tefillos. As we saw the Gemara last week, the Gemara which describes how the relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael was ruptured after the Churban, the iron wall which was erected, like the original iron curtain, the line that the gates of tefillah were locked after the destruction of the mikdash. So that's what Hashem is promising here. As long as this house stands, the Hashgacha will be there. However, there's no guarantee that the Mikdash is going to stand for all time. We know the Mikdash is going to be destroyed. And once the Mikdash is destroyed, so then we're going to have to revisit what exactly is the Hashgacha relationship. This is like going to be a halacha l'maaseh question in a way. We go to daven at the Kotel. Is there any special power to a tefillah at the Kotel? It could be the answer is no. We'll have to look a little bit later on in the shir. However, on the other hand, the idea lasum es shemi sham, placing my name there, so that is going to be forever. Aval shemi asim sham ad olam shezeh lo yivsak b'shum pam af bechorbanah. It doesn't matter if the Mikdash is standing. It doesn't matter if the Mikdash is destroyed. This is always and for all eternity the spot of the Beis HaMikdash. This always has the sanctity of the Beis HaBechira, right? You're allowed to offer karbanos outside of the central Mizbeah before the Mikdash was built. Once the Mikdash is built, even after its destruction, you can't bring karbanos anywhere else. Right, the Mikdash has a permanent kedusha. There's a whole sugya about the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. Was the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael nullified after the destruction or not? In the Gemara, kedusha rishona kedusha l'shaita v'kedusha l'asad lavo or not? Was the kedusha lost? The way the Rambam understands halacha lemaisa is that the kedusha of the original sanctification of Eretz Yisrael was lost after the Babylonian conquest. The Rambam explains because since the Kedusha was established through conquest, the conquest of Yehoshua, so that Kedusha was lost through conquest, the conquest of Nebuchadnezzar. And Eretz Yisrael is left without Kedusha, at least to some degree, until the Jews return in the time of Ezra. In the time of Ezra, the Kedusha is done peacefully, and so therefore that Kedusha lasts for all time. So that's the opinion of the Rambam. Eretz Yisrael was sanctified, that sanctity was lost upon the Chorban, and then it was regained permanently when the Jews came back in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. However, the Rambam writes that there was one area where the sanctity was never lost at all, and that is the sanctity of the Beis HaMikdash, the sanctity of Har HaMoriah, because that Kedusha did not come through what Bnei Yisrael did. It didn't come through military conquest. Rather, it came from Lasum Es Shemisham. Who is sanctifying this spot on the map? Not Yoshua, not David, not Shlomo, the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Hashem dwells his Shechina there in place of the Mikdash. And now that has permanent Kedusha. So all the halachos now about going up to Har HaBayis in a state of Tumah, et cetera, the Rambam says those always apply for all time to the Mikdash because its Kedusha comes directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is permanent. So the Malbim is teasing that out of the Pesukim over here. Again, let us go back to the original line that Hashem has, where he says, right, Hikdashti sabayis ad olam. So my name will dwell there forever. The Kedusha never goes away. The Hashgacha, the second element that Shlomo had davened for, so that is going to be there kol hayamim, but that only necessarily means the days when the Mikdash is standing. What happens if the Mikdash is destroyed? Let's look a little farther on in the Shir to see. So now HaKadosh Baruch Hu continues with his message to Shlomo, and he says, all this is going to be fine and good if you guys keep the mitzvos. However, if you abandon the mitzvos and you go worship other gods, so then, so I'll cut Israel off from the land which I gave to them. I will send the house away from me. Right? It sounds like Hashem had said, I will always look at the Mikdash. Now I'm going to send it away. And Israel will be a proverb, right? People will talk about what a disgraced nation. So they will talk about Klal Yisrael. Likewise, anybody who sees the destroyed Beis HaMikdash, so they will hiss and they will say, look what Hashem did to the land, look what Hashem did to the people. And the answer is because they worshipped other gods. Basically, lines from the Tokoha. Okay, so if things are going to be good, things can be great, but if we turn away from the Torah, then everything that Shlomo has can be lost. And we know, Hashem, at some point we'll get to the end of Malachim Beis, and we'll get to the Churban, but the Churban is absolutely set up as the inverse of what's happening over here. And the Navi is telegraphing it already at this point. The Churban is going to be the undoing of everything that Shlomo did. Right now we're in the happy times. Right now we're in the glory years. It's basically almost a messianic era. Klal Yisrael are living in a state of true geula. So Hashem is telling them now that it can all be lost. And that's exactly what is going to happen by the end of Malachim Beis. Okay. A few insights, I think, from the Mefarshim on the Pesukim over here. So first, I want to flag something that Rashi brings out. And I think this is particularly germane to Shlomo, and it follows up on a theme of Shlomo as we've seen all year long. So what exactly Hashem focused on the fact that all the nations are going to make a mockery of Israel, right? They're all going to hiss, and the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi brings it out as well, right? Says what's right now, right? It says right now the passing the Dereyam Habayis Asher Haya Elyon. So the Beis HaMikdash is Elyon. What does it mean Elyon? Even for non-Jews, Shlomo's whole dream. Remember Shlomo's whole dream. He said explicitly in his tefillah was he wanted the Beis HaMikdash to be a place of international fame. He said people will come to daven from all over, and they'll come to the Mikdash, and they'll see the beautiful Mikdash, and they'll be inspired. What a God, what a people. Shlomo had international aspirations for recognizing the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that was a central theme of the build, a central goal of the building of the Mikdash. So that particular point, Rashi is explaining, is going to be lost. And not only is it going to be lost, but the total opposite is going to occur. Rather than all the non-Jews in the surrounding area be inspired by the Beis HaMikdash, instead, Achshav b'Churbano, now that it's going to be destroyed, Kol ha'over alav af oved kochavim, yasum v'yisrok b'yom rakichatu is shel Yisrael gorim. Right, so they're all going to say, "What a disgrace!" Instead of this, the Mikdash being a monument to the glory of Klal Yisrael, the Mikdash is going to be a monument to the disgrace of Klal Yisrael because it is going to show their sins and their abandonment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Abarbanel follows up on the exact same point. And not only does the Abarbanel tell us that this is Hashem's warning about what will happen, the Abarbanel tells us that this did happen. He says this is explicit in Sefer Yirmiyahu. When Nebuchadnezzar sends in Nebuzaradan, his general, into Yerushalayim to destroy the Mikdash. So Nebuzaradan says, "Yeah, hey, this is all happening because you sinned against your God." So the Abarbanel says, "We see that everybody knew about this, right? This is a known, thing because it's explicitly referenced." What does Nebuzaradan say? V'amar lo, he says to Yirmiyahu, "Hashem Elokecha diberes ha'ra hazeh salamakom hazeh." Right, Hashem, your God, decreed this evil on this place. Ki chatasa v'lo shamata, because you didn't listen to him. The idea, the Mikdash going from the spot of international glory to international disgrace. Okay, the second main point taken by Barbanel before we finish with this section and then move on to the rest of Shlomo's career to move on from the Mikdash is to ask, okay, so what is the, well, actually, I have two other points to make, is to ask, what is the Mikdash like now? So Barbanel, this is pretty moving. The Barbanel says, "I'm called a koshi b'nevuah hazos." I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, but read a chunk. Right, it's very difficult nevuah to hear. Because, like we can't have just like one nice parak. No, we can have one where there's no pain. There's no, this is like the Cheshek Shlomo parak, right? We have everything, and it's not for the parak where we have everything, where the Navi has to tell us, "Oh, remember, it all can be lost, and all of the joy can turn to misery." That's pretty tough. So the Barbanel says, nevertheless. But if we pay really careful to the nevuah, the seeds of the ultimate redemption are also planted in this nevuah. So even though it's anticipating the Churban of the Bayis Rishon, it's also anticipating the Geula of the Bayis Acharon. So why? So he says there are a couple of things. First of all, as we said, because the Bayis is the Kabayas has a Yihya Elyon. The house will be elevated, meaning in the future. Maybe more importantly, Vayu Ein Avilibi Sham Kol Hayamim. Right? Hashem is always, he's never gonna fully leave. Oh, he's never gonna the Kedusha is never going to leave, as we referenced before. But now the Barbanel goes and he shows the Bar is his expertise not only in Tanakh, everyone knows that the Barbanel was a celebrated expert in everything, every all Torah Shebichtav. But Abarbanel shows his expertise in Midrashim of Chazal. And he goes and he, the editors here, in the Bar-Ilan edition, at least, you know, or struggle to find his midrashim before they dug them up. But he has a couple of them. He says, Amru Chazal, Kasuv Echad Omer, one pasuk says in Hosea, Elcha v'ashuva el makomi. So Hosea says, Hashem's gonna leave, right? I'm gonna go, and I'm gonna go back to my spot. I'm gonna go up to Shemayim. I'm out. Okay. Now the Medrash contrasts that with the pasuk over here. The Kasuv Echad Omer, Bayu ain't really bisham kol hayamim. So right, I'll dwell in the Mikdash forever. So okay, so how could that be done? The answer that the Medrash gives is Panav Lamala. So Hashem's face turns upwards. The Enav Lamata, but his eyes, as it were, and his heart are turned downwards. In other words, what's the Medrash really saying is that even in a state of Chorban, when Hashem pulls up from the Mikdash, he never pulls up fully, right? Hashem's heart is still in the Mikdash, as it were, even if his face is no longer there. It's like the lady, right? Like Anochi, you know, better than me, Mercha Kamara, whatever it was exactly. I'm in the far west. Okay, so that's idea number one, right? Is that Hashem is never going to leave fully. Then the Abarbanel continues, is Chuma, another Medrash. Okay, the editor spends a long time trying to figure out where this was. Then he finds out it's actually Medrash Tehillim. Okay, wherever it is, doesn't matter. He brings Machlokas here in Chazal. One position. I'm Rabbi Shulman Nachmani. So Rabbi Shulman Nachmani, pretty hardcore. Before the Chorban, the Shechina was in the Heichal. It was great. Neamar, Hashem, Beheichal Kodesho. Hashem is in his sanctified Heichal. Bishachar Beis HaMikdash, Hashem Bashamayim Kiso. So after the Chorban, so then Hashem's throne is in Shamayim. In other words, Shlomo Nachmani is saying that Hashem leaves upon the Chorban. Now this really tracks more closely with the Gemara and Brachos that we saw last week. However, a couple of the other Chachamim here push back. Amar Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas, those are Lazar ben Pedas, same with the Yoli Amaroyim, Bein Charav, Bein Lo Charav, Eino Zaz Mimkomo. No. Hashem does not fully leave the Mikdash even after the Chorban. How do you know? Shneamar, the pasuk an hour or parak. V'hayu einai v'libi sham kol hayamim. I'm never going to leave. Never going to leave. V'chein hu omer, koli el Hashem ekra v'yaneinu mi har kodesho sela. Right, pasuk in Tehillim. Hashem answered me from his holy mountain. So why is it called a holy mountain? The answer is, shafilu ha'har harei abitushasa. The mountain retains its kedusha. Does Har HaBayis retain its kedusha ad hayom hazeh? Absolutely. That's still where Hashem answers us from. The Mikdash may be gone, but no, Hashem still answers our tefillos from there. Ramak Reimaksev vayiven as Beis Hashem hu Elokim asher b'Yerushalayim. So Ezra builds the house for Hashem who was in Yerushalayim. What does it mean was in Yerushalayim? It means Hashem was in Yerushalayim the whole time. When they build the second Mikdash, Hashem still was in Yerushalayim. That is the view of Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas arguing with Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman and saying that Hashem is still there in the Makom HaMikdash even after the Chorban. Third, right, so we pass like the majority. So we have one more Amora. Who's he going to pass like? Is he going to pass like Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman or like Lazar ben Pedas? Rabbi Acha passes like Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas. He says Hashem never left the Mikdash. I'm Rabbi Acha. La'olam in Hashkina zaza mikosel ma'aravi shel Beis HaMikdash. The Shekhinah never leaves the western wall of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, we should just be clear for a second. The Kosel Ma'aravi that he is describing is not what we call the Kosel Ma'aravi, right? What we call the Kosel Ma'aravi is the retaining wall that was built to support the reconstructed Har HaBayis. The line here is the western wall of the Beis HaMikdash itself, which is the wall, that's the back wall of the Kodesh HaKadashim. Now, it happens to be that the back wall of the Kodesh HaKadashim is extremely close to the Kotel. And if you do, you know, the Kotel tunnel tour, so, you know, you get to that spot where they tell you, like, they think that this is, like, opposite the Kodesh HaKadashim, and you're extremely close. But, that's his opinion. The Shekhinah never left the western wall of the Mikdash, in other words, the spot of the Kodesh HaKadashim. Shneamar, hinei zeh omed achar kisleinu. This is standing on the other side of our wall. Now the Abarbanel is done quoting the Midrashim, I mean, Abarbanel talks for a couple of lines, and we should, especially it's Pesach season. Abarbanel has a Haggadah where he has a beautiful and inspiring introduction, and he says, like my whole life I've been expelled and expelled and expelled. So it's kind of hard to tell a bunch of Jews who've been expelled for the third time to like celebrate Pesach as if we're free. Like we're not free. Life is terrible. Where persecution is unbearable. So Abarbanel, brings his bitachon forward in the Haggadah, and he brings it forward here as well. V'zo nachama gedola betikva rabba la'am ha'holcha b'choshech. This is such a comfort for the nation who is walking in the darkness. Sha'od yiru or gadol. We will see the great light. Upisom yavo el heichalo ha'adon Hashem tzavachos. And it's going to have, boom, Hashem is going to suddenly truly come to this heichal. Yavo Elokeinu. Val Yecharash, he will not be silent. Yibana Hartzion, he'll build Yerushalayim. Yakim Sukkas David Hanofalas, he'll rebuild the fallen Sukkah of David. Via Beis Mikdasho Elyon Lamalchei Aretz. And the Beis Mikdash will be seen, will be renowned, will be Elyon, elevated for all the kings of the earth. Right now, all the kings are on the Barbanel. It's exactly the warning Hashem gave, right? Where the Jews are a disgrace, the Jews are spat upon. The Jews are looked down upon. In the United Nations, the only machlokas they have is how anti-Israel should they be before they make a resolution, right? But we have the bitachon, we have the guarantee that the Mikdash is going to return. Kadosh Baruch Hu has never fully left, and as long as Hashem has never fully left the Mikdash, so we know with a capital K, capital N, capital O, capital W, that Hashem is going to fully return, and the dream of Shlomo. And all the surrounding nations will look to the Mikdash as a place of inspiration and respect and reverence. That in Eretz Yisrael is all going to come back. Okay, so at this point, we have now finally concluded the narrative of the construction of the Mikdash. And so now, with the time left, let's look at the rest of the parak and let's look at what Shlomo is doing in the realm of geopolitics. He's actually doing a lot. Okay, so we have now back to Hiram, David's Shlomo's buddy, the king of Tsur, who supplied all the wood right from the Lebanese forests. Okay, so it's been 20 years. Hiram supplied wood. He supplied cedar wood, cypress wood, gold. So the Mefarshim, I think, explained this means like not literal gold you mine, but goldsmithery. Impressive craftsmanship. So now Pasuk says something kind of shocking. Oz yitain hamalach Shlomo l'chiram esrim ir be'eretz hagolil. The way the Pasuk here describes it, it sounds like Shlomo is giving Chiram 20 cities in Eretz Yisrael in payment for the wood, which is very difficult for like three reasons. Number one, it's difficult because how could Shlomo give away land in Eretz Yisrael? That's kind of shocking. Number two, it's difficult because I'm not sure, the Torah already, the Navi already told us what Shlomo paid for the wood. He didn't pay in land. Shlomo paid in grain, in oil. The Navi told us exactly the immense amount of resources that Shlomo provides to Hiram. So it's very hard to think that the Navi here means that Shlomo is paying in land for the supplies. The third problem, as the Mefarshim point out, is Pasuk Divrei Hayamim, which tells us the exact opposite. The Pasuk Divrei Hayamim talks about cities asher nasan churam leShlomo, that Shlomo is busy building up cities that Hiram gave him. So it doesn't really make any sense. Well, Hiram gives cities to Shlomo, but then Shlomo pays cities to Hiram. Well, what exactly is going on? So we have to figure out what this is. We should just see the rest of the chunk over here. The Navi says that Hiram goes out to check out the cities, and he's not very happy with Shlomo. He says, Ma aram ha'ila asher nasata li achi. My brother, he didn't give me such good cities. Okay, it's called Eretz Kavul. The Mefarshim discussion what exactly that means. We don't need to know for now. I want to focus now on the major question. What's going on with these cities exactly that Hiram was giving Shlomo? So there are two main interpretations, one from the Radak and one from the Abarbanel. I did put the Radak on here. So did I put the Abarbanel twice? No. So the Radak explains that, oh, well, there was a trade. Each king gave cities to the other king. Why would you do that? He says, simple. If you exchange gifts to show friendship, and we just came off of Purim, right? Ehu. Why do we exchange gifts on Purim? To establish lock in friendship. So what better way for Hiram and Shlomo to lock in their alliance by the but the by them sharing cities with each other? I'll give some of my land to you, and you'll give some of your land to me. That is the interpretation of the Radak. The Dat Mikra likes this one. Now, part of the problem, though, is even if that's true, it is kind of surprising, though, that Shlomo could give up parts of Eretz Yisrael, right? It's a trade, but like, really? Give up parts of Eretz Yisrael? So the Abarbanel thinks it means something else. The Abarbanel says, he says, it's very difficult to imagine that Shlomo would just casually surrender land from Eretz Yisrael. And furthermore, if what really was happening here was a land, a city's trade between Hiram and Shlomo, well, the Pasuk in Sefer Melachim really should have mentioned it, right? If this is a trade, so like Ikar Chasam and Sefer, he should have told him it's going to happen in Sefer Devarim. So the Abarbanel explains that what's happening here is something else. Shlomo, as we said before, is providing food in exchange for all the wood. Now, Shlomo basically tells Hiram, here's the deal. Instead of me collecting all the stuff and then shipping it off to you, so I'm just going to make you in charge of the tax revenues. The cities belong to Eretz Yisrael. He didn't surrender the cities. He surrendered the revenues of the cities. Yigve la'elav. Right? Hiram, I have agreed. I'm committing to send you this and this amount of wood, of wheat and oil annually. And rather than send me an invoice and wait for me to send it to you, here's the deal. Here are the 20 cities. You collect the negotiated sum of wheat and oil from those 20 cities, and that's how the arrangement is going to work. So it's just an arrangement of convenience, right? The Abarbanel suggests it's also possible that what happens, Hiram sends his workers to plant in those lands, right? So the land belongs to Eretz Yisrael, but we're going to have sewer farmers working it and giving the produce to Hiram. Right? The Gemara calls an arrangement like this: you have the Kinyan HaGuf and the Kinyan HaPeiros. You have one party who owns the underlying real estate, and you have one party who owns the rights to the revenues. The classic relationship when a husband and wife get married. So property that the wife brings into the marriage is called the Nechse Melug. The wife retains underlying ownership of the real estate, but the husband is entitled to the revenues that the real estate produces. So the Barbanel explains that that's what's happening here with Hiram and with Shlomo. And that then explains why Hiram's not so happy, because Hiram goes and checks out his cities and he says, really? You think I can get that much wheat and oil out of these 20 cities? He's not so enthusiastic about the deal. But okay, if you negotiate with the smartest man in the world, sometimes you're always going to come out on top, maybe. So David maybe. So Shlomo maybe got the better of that one. Okay, yeah. The Barbanel, he says it can't be that Hiram and Shlomo had like a massive break because what's the next pasuk going to say? Oh, did I not put the next pasuk on there? Oh, I skipped the pasuk. Okay, the next pasuk tells us that Hiram or seems to say that Hiram sends lots of gold to David. So it can't be that they had it's a Shlomo. So it can't be that their relationship was totally broken. Okay, what does that mean exactly that Hiram sends gold to Shlomo? So the Barbanel tells us we'll understand this at the end. Let's skip this Barbanel for now. We'll see the rest of the pack pretty quickly, and then we'll understand what's happening in that passage that we skipped. The Navi then tells us a couple more things. Number one, so Shlomo sets up a mas, right? So he needs workers to do lots of building. Shlomo is definitely a builder. He is building the Beis HaMikdash that we saw, his house that we saw. The Milo seems to be like a new neighborhood in Yerushalayim that has to be built. The walls of Yerushalayim are built, and then Chatzor, Megiddo, and Gazer. These are three cities. So Shlomo, he's not doing fighting. He's doing building. He needs workers to build all these things. We need to know two things. Number one, what are these cities that he is building? Hatzor, Megiddo, and Gazer. Number two, who are the people who are the mas, who are the people who are building these cities? And the Navi is going to tell that, but is going to tell us both of those things right now. Those three cities, Hatzor, Megiddo, Gazer. So first of all, the city of Gezer. It's an important city. You'll see it as a map in a second. Somebody tells us that Paro conquered Gezer and Paro drove out the Canaanim. There were a number of fortified Canaanite cities that the Jews all the way going back to the time of Yeshua had never conquered. Throughout the period of the Shoftim, those remained Canaanite cities. The most famous one is Yerushalayim. So David takes care of Yerushalayim, but there still are a few other ones. One of them, Gezer, is conquered by Paro, and then Paro gives it to Shlomo as a dowry when Shlomo marries the infamous Bas Paro. Okay. We then have a number of other cities that Shlomo builds. He has chariots, he has riders. Once again, that phrase, Shlomo asher chashak, everything that Shlomo desires to build, he's able to do so. Everything is a success. He doesn't even need to use Jews to build this stuff because he has local Canaan who he puts to work. The leftover Canaan. So they're the ones who get put to work. The Jews, they are the important ones. They're the ones on top. They're the Anshei Melchama. I think the Radak points out, Rabbanel points out, Shlomo doesn't even need an army. You know, the army is there for deterrence. He has many important soldiers, but they're not fighting. They're just there deterring anybody from even thinking of messing with him. We're at a time of peace, and the Canaanim are being put to work. They have to go and they have to do schlepping to build the cities. Now, the cities that Shlomo builds, if you look at the map over here, I took this map from the Ala Torah, who has it. So we can see what exactly Shlomo is doing. The cities that Shlomo is building, I'll just move the thing here. So it's part of Shlomo's, again, international ambitions. The core area where the Jews are living in is the modern day Yehuda Shomron, right? The modern day Yehuda down here, right? Here's Hebron, the Shomron up over here, the mountains. Before the time for Ashur of David, anywhere beyond the mountains, the Jews couldn't touch. The coastal plain belonged to the Plishtim. The stuff over here belonged to the Canaanim. You have a valley here, Emek Yisrael, which cuts across the Galil. And the international trade routes, right, from to Aram, to Ashur, to Babel, the whole Fertile Crescent trade routes go through the valleys, right? The Jews have been cut off economically from all this commerce. Shlomo, a part of his breaking out and expanding, is able to establish control of the coast. The three cities mentioned before are pivotal fortresses on the coastal road. Gezer is the one over here in the south. So this had been a Canaanite city, and you can see the Jews never conquered it. Paro comes down from Mitzrayim. He comes up, he marches up, 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 up. Paro conquers Gezer, destroys Gezer, gives it to Shlomo, and so that is the first fortification here on the international highway that Shlomo built. We then travel up to the north, and you have Megiddo, which is the city right there at the entrance to the Emek Yisrael, the valley that cuts across the Galil. So Megiddo is over overlooks that it's on the mountains overlooking the valley. It's a very strategic spot. And so Shlomo builds another fortification with chariots over here. And then the third one that we just said he conquered, Chatzor, so that's on the other side of the valley, right? You come up over here as you leave the valley, and so Shlomo has that as well. The international ambitions that Shlomo has. Now, pretty soon in the parak, they're going to tell us another thing that Shlomo does internationally. Not only is he establishing control of the land trade route, which is extremely lucrative for Klal Yisrael, but we're going to go south for a second, and what do we have down here? So we think of all this, we think of the state of Israel, right? Israel, here's the Negev, and then down here is Eilat, or Etzion Gever is what it's called in the Tanakh. However, traditionally, Etzion Gever was not part of the territory of Yehuda. Yehuda's territory cuts out in the Negev. You then have Amalek over here, and you have Edom. Edom is in charge down here. The whole area of Esav goes over here. If you have Etzion Gever, you have access to the naval trade routes, right? You can get to the, you know, this is the act of war in 1967. right? Was Nasser cutting off Israel's access to the port of Eilat? Well, if you have access to a port down here, you can do trading with Africa. You can do trading with southern Arabia. All sorts of options are open to you. Shlomo, in a couple of seconds, we're going to do this now. We have the map, understand what he's doing. Shlomo wants to build a port right over here. And this is going to give him access to immense wealth. Now, Edom has been controlling this area, but they have not been able to exploit it for one very simple reason. In order to exploit naval trade, that's something you need ships, right? So Edom, they're hanging out like in the desert. Esav, Yitzhak tells Esav, Al charbach hatefyeh, right? Esav, you live by your sword. Esav doesn't live by a ship. Esav, they only build ships by Esav. So what Shlomo's going to do, Shlomo's going to take over Etzion Geber, way beyond the traditional boundaries of the land of Yehuda. He then will make an alliance with his good old friend up in the north, Hiram from Tzur. What does Hiram know to do? Tzur, they're the greatest shipbuilders in the world, right? So Hiram and Da and Shlomo are gonna go into business together. Hiram is gonna send his shipbuilders down here. So Shlomo now has the port access. Hiram has the know-how. It's gonna be hard. I mean, they're gonna have to get wood over here also. It's not like the easiest thing to have wood down, not many trees growing in the Negev, right? We're gonna get the wood down here. We're gonna build ships. And they're going to have a trading fleet, which is going to bring immense amounts of gold from the south. And between the two of these, between the land trade route and the naval trade route, Shlomo is able to make Eretz Yisrael an international economic power. Right? We're not just a local power. We are now truly an international power. And Shlomo understands you need money to make that happen. And he is doing what is necessary to bring in those dollars. Just to see the rest of the parak, to see this coming through, right? So Navi tells us, okay. So Bas Paro gets taken out. It's an interesting line over there. We don't like the daughter of Paro, but at least initially, David has good things. Shlomo has good things to say. Shlomo throws the daughter of Paro out of the palace because the palace is too close to the Beis HaMikdash. Those two are linked. He says this explicitly. Divrei Hayyamim says, I can't have a wife living in the base of it. It's too holy. It's too close to the base of Mikdash. So all the wives and Bas Paro is included. He makes her a special palace, but he makes her that palace in the Milo, the new neighborhood. So it's still tough, but she has a special palace, and she's going to be set above all his wives, and that is going to cause major problems. Right now, though, things are good. Shlomo is saying it's inappropriate for me to have a wife in this palace, which is basically next door to the base of Mikdash. Shlomo offers karbanos on a regular basis. All this is wonderful. Vishilam esabayas, he completes the house. The idea of completeness, the idea of peace, is in Shlomo's very name. Now let's just see the rest of the parak, right? The naval expedition we were describing before. Shlomo makes these ships in Etzion Gever, which is Be'eretz Edom. It's not his land. It's Edom's land. But Shlomo is able to expand. He's able to take it. Hiram then sends the men. And it's amazing. And they're bringing 420 kikar of gold, right? So immense, immense wealth. So we close the parak with like Shlomo exactly as we want. The Mikdash is standing. The karbanos are being offered. International relations. Shlomo doesn't have to go to war. He gets Paro to do his fighting for him. He's stipping Hiram, but Hiram's happy with him anyway. They're going into business together. The money is coming in. The borders are strong. The army is strong. The work is being done, but the Jews don't have to do the work because the Canaanim are being put to work while the Jews are in the army. And the Jews in the army, they don't have to fight because all they do is just stand there and be scary and deter anybody else from messing with them. So things are like perfect. We end Parak Tes, and we're just Eretz Yisrael is running at like the ideal level it could possibly run. It's being elevated from like a local power. Now, David made it a military power, but Shlomo is providing the economic foundation for this to hold. Even without like a Yoav or an Abishai as fighters, you have the revenues. You can keep it going. So it's amazing. It's stable. It's peaceful. It's all glorious. And let's enjoy it because things are going to get more complicated soon. So let's stop here. And Hashem, we'll learn more next week. Hopefully, the email.